Welcome, everyone. We are at Real World Cloud Computing by David Curley from the Gartner Group. David Curley is a VP and Gartner Fellow in Gartner Research and is a leading authority on IT. As a member of Gartner Research, Mr. Curley analyzes emerging business and technology trends and explores how these trends shape the way individuals and companies derive value from technology. His current research is focused on cloud computing and how the internet and web technologies, standards, and business models are impacting the IT landscape. So welcome to David and our online audience.
Thank you very much. Well, we're here to talk about cloud computing today. Is there anybody in the audience who has not heard this term cloud computing? It's a new term for you. Okay, so nobody has been living in Antarctica for the last couple of years. That's good. Cloud computing is one of those terms that over the last 2 years has exploded onto the market. It's probably one of the most hyped terms and arguably an overhyped term that I've seen in the last 20 years that I've been tracking things with information technology. Anybody out there familiar with the Gartner hype curve? A few people? Well, at Gartner, we cover and track technologies, and we look at something we call the hype cycle, where technologies go through this area of getting more and more hype in the market. They get up to what we call the peak of inflated expectations, inevitably crash down into the trough of disillusionment, and then some of those technologies then get out into what we call the slope of enlightenment, where it's more a common part of our IT fabric and IT infrastructure. Cloud computing is very much at the peak of the hype cycle today. So what I want to do with this presentation around real-world cloud computing is to talk to you broadly about the topic, what it really means, where it came from, and where it's going. But since it's at the top of the peak of the hype cycle, I also want to dispel some of the myths and some of the overhype. But you'll also hear me talk about cloud computing as a very important, very real, long-term phenomena that we do expect to go through that cycle and get out into the slope of enlightenment. And so I'm also going to talk about some of the key value propositions around cloud computing and the way that you can make sure that when it inevitably falls into that trough of disillusionment, probably over the next year or two at the most, you can recognize the important things that you want to continue to track and look at. Because just as you want to avoid too much hype at the peak, you want to avoid ignoring things that are in that trough of disillusionment. So getting a balanced view of cloud computing is critically important. With that in mind, I'm breaking the presentation into three key issues today. The first is going to look at what is cloud computing and how does it differ from what we've been doing for the last 40 years. Can you say time sharing? How the heck, Dave, is this shared service environment any different than the way we had a shared service time sharing environment back in 1960-something? Well, we're going to talk about how this differs from a lot of things that we've looked at in the past, but also how it's very similar to some of these traditional concepts and what that means for you. Second, what are the risks and challenges and what are the ideal targets and best practices for using it? So does it matter? Is it safe? How do you put together the right decision models to apply cloud computing appropriately at various parts of your environment? What is it going to mean to students? What is it going to mean to faculty? What is it going to mean to administrative staff? And the kinds of solutions that you deliver across those different constituencies. I'm going to give you some models to help make those decisions. And the frameworks I'm going to give you are ones that we're using quite frequently with a range of companies across many industries. And then we can work with you to hone it down to some specific things in the educational sector. And I'm going to spend a little bit of time at the end, not a lot, but I do want to touch on some of the long-term impacts cloud computing will have on the market and tease out some issues around vendors and how traditional vendors like IBM and HP and Microsoft are entering into this world of cloud computing and what that will mean to you, as well as what's happening with the web-centric vendors like Salesforce.com and Google. How do these things come together, and what do those market forces mean to the vendors that you're going to look at in the future? So the goal across these three key issues is to give you a strategic view of cloud computing. And so I'm not going to drill into all of the individual technologies or specific ways to deal with security identity management, but I'll talk about where those drill-down topics will fit into your overall strategies. Okay? With that, the first point that I want to make is that cloud computing is not brand new. Cloud computing is an evolutionary phenomenon. It didn't spring up out of the ground somewhere fully formed and completely divorced from what we've been doing in the past. There are major activities that have occurred in the world of computing as you know it and this emerging world of the web that are feeding into this cloud computing phenomenon. So you've been dealing with virtualization. You've been dealing with automated provisioning. You've been looking at service catalogs. There's grid computing and high-performance computing, real-time infrastructure approaches to look at more dynamic management of infrastructure, software as a service and positioning IT as a service provider. All of those things have been leading towards elements that are fundamental to this world of cloud computing. In fact, some of the early vendors that are providing cloud services like Amazon came to cloud computing from this right-hand side in many ways. Amazon needed to come up with a layered service model to support more dynamic development of their website and extending that website to create different kinds of web properties. And to do that, they needed a very flexible infrastructure layer that was independent of an application layer and the ability to build applications on top of that. And lo and behold, by some of the things they invented and put in place, it now delivered a way of delivering some infrastructure services. And likewise, even in the education market, we see some things that various educational institutions have done that are leading them towards this world of cloud computing as well. North Carolina State University has something called the Virtual Computer Lab that they built back in 2007, which provides a way of dynamically delivering compute resources to different types of user communities. That evolves to become, essentially for them, a private cloud computing environment. So you'll see more of these things that I'll talk about later, but the point is, there's lots of things that you can bring into this world of cloud computing, but there's also things coming from the cloud and the world of the web. So the web is a platform, web-oriented architectures, mashup technologies, new architectures like the massively distributed Googleplex, and new architectures that people like Amazon and others have put in place, as well as multi-tenant architectures for delivering web-based software as a service applications are part of this as well. So to succeed in cloud computing, you've got to understand that it is a blending of these two things, which comes up with a revolutionary style of computing that we call cloud computing. So the two extremes you may hear from include those that will say, this is brand new and it's all new applications and what we've done in the past doesn't matter. It's got to be totally new models. They don't get it. You've got to look at building on what's in the past. The left-hand side or the other extreme are those that will say there's nothing new with cloud computing and I've been doing it since the days of time sharing with mainframes. They don't get it because there are, in fact, key attributes I'll talk to you on the next slide about that really define the world of cloud computing. So it's a blending of those things, and understanding how these elements come together are vitally important. So with that in mind, let me start with the Gartner definition. Gartner defines cloud computing as a style of computing where scalable and elastic IT capabilities are provided as a service to customers using internet technologies. And so each of these terms are very, very important. We're going to talk about it as we start building out some of the key attributes. So if I look at some of the key attributes that are a part of this, one is delivery as a service. So cloud computing is service-based. This distinguishes it from what we've seen in the past with traditional outsourcing or hosting types of vendors where you have dedicated resources, and while somebody else might run this for you, you're oftentimes intimately involved in the details of the back-end infrastructure and the architecture of those environments that someone is managing. Service-based talks about an abstraction of concerns between a service consumer and a service provider. So if you're acting as a consumer and I'm the provider, you see the service level interface. You see what I expose in terms of a user interface or APIs, any of the implementation details behind the scenes, the databases that I might be using, the infrastructure, the data center models, et cetera, are completely opaque to you. It's that separation of concerns that defines this service interface model and distinguishes this from the implementations of many application service providers in the past and many of the hosting or outsourcing providers. If you don't have that separation of concerns, you don't have cloud computing. And that separation is what really empowers the provider to drive economies of scale and deliver new architectures, and it's what empowers you as a consumer to focus your attention on just building on top of whatever that service is. scalable and elastic. The key characteristic here is the cloud service that you're getting access to can be scaled up or down in a very rapid and dynamic fashion. You may be paying for resources used, or you might have other types of payment models, but the key from a technical standpoint is the ability to rapidly scale things, you know, up and down and use what you need, and when it's no longer needed, it's available to others, which gets us into this idea of shared. So cloud computing is a shared service model where multiple tenants, multiple consumers are sharing various parts of the environment behind the scenes, which is what drives the overall efficiency of this type of model. We also look at metered by use, which may or may not feed into some payment models, but the ability to at least track utilization and use that to drive performance of the application is important. And then finally, it's built on internet technologies. So it's a combination of these attributes and bringing together the technologies I had on the last slide, which is the fundamental underpinning of cloud computing. Okay? So that's the key attributes, and it's these attributes that are driving a lot of the value that people derive as well. So what I want to do next, is, now that we've got the definition, we've talked about the attributes, I've started looking at how this differs from some other styles of computing, let's shift a little bit and say, how should you approach cloud computing? Well, we see the successful model for an educational institution or enterprise or any business or government agency is to break your analysis of cloud computing into three parallel work streams. The first is consuming cloud services. So what are the services provided by these external providers? What are the types of services? What are the risks? What are the opportunities? What are the business models around that? How do you decide on what to select? Lots of issues which I'll be drilling into in a little bit of detail later. But it's all about I'm the consumer, and it has nothing to do with the hardware and software implementation details behind the scenes. So this is no software, no hardware, all services provided by a third party. The other side of that separation of the concerns is the second item. So what do you do in terms of implementing cloud computing environments? So to what extent does it make sense for you to actually go to the other side and say, I'm going to be a provider of services. I'm going to build an environment to deliver infrastructure, applications, or what have you as a service to internal constituencies, and then potentially open those up at some point so that you become a cloud service provider to others as well. So one is looking at consuming, the other is looking at building, and then overlaying on top of that, you'll think of this idea of hybrid cloud computing environments that might bring your internal services and your external services together. Now, the reason why I say you want that as two parallel initiatives is if you don't, a lot of the vendors out there will drive around you and create a lot of confusion. The word cloud is stamped on everything on the planet these days. I'm waiting to see the advertisement for power supplies that say, ooh, here's your cloud computing power supply. And so everybody puts cloud computing on anything that they've got because, okay, if you're building a cloud, it's lots of traditional hardware and software that you'll put together in some way. Okay? Well, that's only going to be of interest if you're implementing cloud computing environments. You need to focus your attention on consuming cloud services as well. And the minute the vendor talks hardware or software, you put them into another category. So up here, focus your attention on how are you going to enable me to consume these external services and what are my selection criteria that I want to use. And then finally, this third one is one that a lot of people are missing today, but it's equally as important. And that's developing cloud-based applications and solutions. So if I am going to use cloud, and I'm not getting software as a service, which fits up in the top, but I want to deploy some sort of application I buy or create into the cloud, how do I do that? Where do I migrate what I'm doing today? Where do I need to enhance it? And where do I want to build new innovative applications that take advantage of cloud? And how do I do that? So that becomes a key factor in your application selection and development process. So AD looks at three in a big way in the application lifecycle. Your infrastructure and operations group looks at two, and then it starts building into your AD folks on how they might deliver internal services. And then number one is looking at services that will go across many parts of your organization. You can then start mapping in what the vendors provide to this. So when you look at vendors, you should ask them what they're providing. If they're providing hardware and software, they go off to the side. If they're truly delivering a service, saying we're going to provide a service and run it on our environment, they're delivering cloud computing services. You might use those in number one. You might use some cloud services as a building block for your internal private cloud because there can be a supply chain there, and you might use it for developing cloud solutions. If they're talking about selling you a piece of software, you next want to identify, is this a piece of software that is going to help me to manage, secure, or otherwise deal with cloud resources? So provisioning to internal or external cloud resources as an example. So selling optimized software to secure, manage, or develop for cloud. That's real cloud software. And then third is, are they selling traditional hardware, software, consulting, and systems integration and outsourcing? This is where you need to have the biggest level of skepticism because anything can be labeled cloud, and look at the subset of what they're providing that is truly helping you to build something which will deliver those attributes that I had on the previous slide. So this is a strategic high-level model for how you can start organizing your approach to cloud computing. Let's drill down now on the next few slides into this world of consuming cloud computing services. So we defined it and looked at the attributes. The next thing to understand is that there's different service models with cloud computing. Now, some of you will already know about this, but I know we have a wide range of skill sets and understanding in the audience. So I want to go through this because it's an important foundation that everybody needs to think about. First, you have infrastructure as a service or system infrastructure services, compute, storage, similar types of services. It's using cloud in place of your internal data center is the easy way to look at it. You have platform as a service, which is a wide category. There's not one thing that is platform as a service. It's database, it's messaging, it's development tools, it's runtime engines, it's business process management, integration technologies, other middleware components. So that application infrastructure stack that you've thought about in your traditional world of software and service-oriented architecture will have various analogs where those things are delivered as a service. In addition, there's new capabilities like application platform as a service that will combine those things together into an integrated development and runtime package like Salesforce.com's Force.com, and there are many others that are out there in that market. So the point here is those are services that would be used by your development organization as a foundation for building cloud-centric applications. If you're building on top of infrastructure as a service, you own that whole stack and you've got to, you know, basically build, you know, everything. So those are two services targeted at your IT group. You then have software as a service, information services, and business services. Software as a service is looking at more packaged applications delivered as a multi-tenant application service. Information feeds are a type of cloud service as well, and many of these are fairly mature. So if what you're getting that's value isn't an application that I run, but an information feed, catalog of data or stock market information or what have you, that becomes part of your palette of services that you use to build cloud-centric solutions. And finally, there's cloud business services as well. Classic example of this in the world of cloud computing are Amazon Fulfillment Services. So they have a business process that can run behind the scenes where they'll do the storage and warehouse and shipping for you. I can have an e-commerce site. I send them a cloud-based web call saying, ship that Xbox 360 to Susan Curley in Wisconsin, and they'll do that for us. So the key here is a business service is something that has some real-world activities behind the scenes, but it's exposed as an elastically scalable service accessible through a portal-like interface or web-based APIs. And so by looking at all of these services together, that's your palette of composable services to build solutions for your institution. Anything from the infrastructure and you build on top of it to full applications and business services. Behind the scenes, there's cloud enablers that are all of those enabling technologies I talked about. And here again, I'm emphasizing that the provider focuses on things behind the scenes, the consumer builds on top of that. So this is your overall cloud service model, and you're going to have different vendors, different levels of maturity, different selection criteria on some of those different services. Generally speaking, pockets of software as a service are much more mature. We're starting to see a lot more happen with infrastructure and platform as a service, and they're going to be more stable and secure for enterprise uses over the next few years. And then the final thing is, when you're looking at cloud services, recognize service providers can be consumers at the same time. So you're going to see lots of software service providers that may build on somebody's cloud platform as a service or a cloud infrastructure service or combination to deliver their software as a service option. Many software vendors are using Amazon as a foundation and then building something on top of that to deliver to you. You have to factor that into your analysis because if that supply chain exists, it has some implications for security and performance and how you're going to, you know, manage service metrics over time. So that's the service model and the different service categories. The next thing I want to talk about in framing, you know, what's happening with cloud computing are service delivery models. So we now know what cloud computing is, the different categories that you're going to look at. Now, there are different delivery models. We're going to start here with this definition of private cloud computing on the left and public on the right. And I call it custom private cloud because in this instance, if you're building a cloud, you're defining the architectures, defining the processes on how that entire environment will work and how it's going to expose the capabilities as a service. On the left-hand side, you're implementing a cloud service, so you're doing the implementation behind the scenes. On the right, you're consuming the service. The left, it's all about hardware, software, and data centers. On the right, it's no hardware, software, or data centers. You manage the implementation on the left versus the service on the right. And on the right, you may be using service brokers to facilitate use or add value to the service. And I'll talk about this concept of service brokers in more detail later. But there are some things that you're going to want to look at once you start looking at these external public cloud services to make it easier to consume that. Otherwise, you get into cloud sprawl. I'm using dozens of different service providers. How do I integrate them? How do I rationalize how I'm using different providers? What if I want to move from one provider to another? Those are all challenges which we see this area of service broker emerging to facilitate. So they're a third party that sits between you and a variety of services that it can help facilitate the governance or consumption or use or migration of those services. On the left, where you're actually building this, you can outsource or have this delivered as a managed service. So I'm seeing tons of people using Rackspace or Terramark or various IBM or HP to essentially be their hosting provider, and then they're building their cloud, their private cloud environment, you know, on top of that as well. So it can be outsourced or you can run that internally. But the important thing here is while you've got these two extremes and they're interesting, there are three things that are growing in between. Public cloud says it's open up to the general public. So with Amazon, anybody with a credit card can get in, including Russian hackers with stolen credit cards doing nefarious activities. You know, so therein lies one of the concerns that people have. Is it secure if I'm in there and all of my stuff is blended with all of the unwashed masses that, you know, might pose security risks? So to address that, we have community cloud that's emerging, which says I'm going to narrow the focus down and it will be only people in government or only people in defense agencies or only people in education or only educational entities in my state. Whatever the case might be, there's various ways that you can limit and control who has access. And as you do that, you can raise your level of comfort and reduce some risk. This is not without cost, so there'll be implications for how much a community cloud costs versus a public cloud because you get into different levels of scalability of that provider. But there's times where you'll look at that. An exclusive cloud says, I'm going to look at the sharing at a different level. Instead of virtual machines, so that, you know, everybody's resources are kind of intermingled on the same devices, an exclusive cloud looks at a model where I have dedicated hardware resources to different users. So, two different educational institutions might have their own dedicated servers and storage devices with their own software running here and here. But it can be dynamically changed. So I can use 30 servers today, 5 the next day, 100 the next day, and it can dynamically scale up and down. So I'm increasing at the hardware unit versus the virtual machine. In addition, there's some differences in software architectures that'll go from a true multi-tenant shared application where everybody's sharing the same database and application to having nuances where I might have my own isolated database. So the point here is to deal with some of the security risks by saying I'm not going to necessarily share everything and it's going to be somewhat isolated and I can combine these things. And then packaged private cloud says rather than me inventing it all myself, I can go to an IBM, an HP, a Microsoft, or a variety of others, VMware is another, and get some prepackaged components that can define the way that my private cloud is going to operate so you can leverage the IP from others and deliver this in a lower cost fashion. So this is talking about what we're seeing evolve. The promise is on the right side with public cloud. It's a growing model, but there's a lot of issues that people or concerns people have around security. Some of those are real. Some of them are only perceived. So the left-hand side is where a lot of focus is. It's a fallback position saying, hey, I'll just build private cloud capabilities myself. And what you're going to be seeing is rising interest in the middle ones. There's few options, but they're starting to emerge. Look at that as the focal point for where the vendors will go next over the next 2 years, particularly as some of the mainline vendors that have come from the enterprise world like IBM and HP get into the game. I think you're going to see more enterprise-level capabilities that will provide you some of these options. We already start to see some packaged private cloud with some cloud start options from HP or the plan for a Microsoft Azure appliance from Microsoft, although that's early beta. Don't expect the Azure appliance to be real in the market for a good year, and there still is a lot of evolution. But conceptually, it's moving in that way. So I wanted to spend some time on those models because you got to start thinking about how this will potentially impact the way you consume these external services or build whatever you're doing internally. Now, if you're building something internally, a private cloud, if you're using VMware, you're not there. It's more than virtualization technology. That is one enabling technology. So you've got to look at how you pull a number of things together to create a true private cloud. It includes dealing with virtual and physical resources and component managers at the bottom, dealing with resource management on configuration, performance, and security, having a service management tier with service catalogs and other capabilities, and then also dealing with access management. So you have a configurable API to get access to that service, and you also have a self-service interface where appropriate, and that access management layer creates that opaque service model so that all of the things underneath can be changed and modified, you know, going forward. If you've got an environment that doesn't have that service access layer providing isolation, you may be using some of the concepts and enabling technologies for cloud and get value out of that, but you don't truly have a private cloud because you haven't created that separation of concerns. So make sure when you're doing this, what you're really thinking about building with private cloud is something that adheres to all of those tenets that I showed you on the early slide. So bottom line, lots of building blocks for private cloud. Keep in mind the overall attributes. We do see this as a major area of spending for lots of institutions, so you do want to think about how whatever you're doing inside becomes more private cloud-like over time, and then you're incrementally going to use some of these external cloud services. So I've already mentioned a little bit on this particular slide, so I'm going to go through it relatively quickly, but I did want to reemphasize that third point that I made beyond consuming and building cloud services, and that is building cloud-centric solutions. So the most simple model that you'll use for using something in the external cloud would be SaaS configuration and mashup. So I'm using a SaaS application. I can configure and change it. I can mash it up with certain APIs to build a bigger solution around, you know, whatever that SaaS application is. So in that light, you want to ask your SaaS vendors, how mashable is it? How are you exposing your information and these different service components that are part of your application that's delivered as a service so that I can modify that, maybe, you know, do some things differently in an end user portal that might bring some of the reporting information or other services together into a composite application that you want to create. So that's the simplest way of getting out into the cloud, but it also defines the way you're going to evaluate some of those vendors. Then you get into migrating, enhancing enterprise software. So where do you take traditional software and move it to the cloud, and where do you enhance it? By the way, be very, very, very careful with this one. There's so many people out there that just assume I'm going to save money in the cloud. You know, they bring you that in-flight magazine and say, why aren't we doing the cloud already? Look at all this cool stuff. Why don't we move this registration system or whatever we've got out into the cloud? Well, the reason why you may not do that is because I've seen lots of cases where it costs more money to put it on Amazon or some cloud, and you're going to get less functionality. Where you get advantage on migration is where you have workloads that are very spiky in nature for their resource requirements, or they're otherwise architected already so it can take advantage of some of the distributed processing capabilities in the cloud. If I've got an application that's architected for the enterprise to run on a scale-up server environment with a known number of users and a predictable amount of workload, then I find it unlikely that you'll save money for that application just simply migrating it, unless you've got a really, really backwards IT environment with very poor operational metrics today. So you at least want to look on enhancing it, saying, can we enhance it to take a better advantage and reduce the cost profile or improve the capabilities we're delivering from this enterprise applications? Sometimes the answer will be yes. But oftentimes what you've got to look at in terms of the things that you're building is how you innovate cloud applications. So building global class applications somewhat from scratch to exploit cloud computing capabilities, this distributed high-performance computing environment. So look at all of those and be careful and recognize not every use case, not every application, not every workload is going to be appropriate to move out into the cloud. So there's lots of tools and techniques to do this. You can build it from scratch with linear scalability. You can leverage the platform services. There's new things like OData and GData and application architectures like web-oriented architecture. All of these fit into the process. So we could spend all day talking about the nuances of how development changes. Suffice it to say that there's a new set of paradigms and models beyond what we think of with traditional service-oriented architecture today that you want to employ to start building these innovative cloud applications. So let's get into the issue of why you do this. What are some of the benefits and challenges? Well, the first significant benefit I want to look at is agility. Reduce time to market, so on-demand delivery, temporary or volatile workloads, etc. So a key value is where does the ability to change things rapidly or rapidly roll something out drive value to the business? The second one is cost. That agility might be important, but I'm not always going to save money on that. But depending upon the application, you may save money by avoiding capital spending and redirecting cash. There's some advantages to moving from capital to operational costs in certain situations. So you have a variable operational cost structure. And there's also some things when you move up to platform as a service, versus that simple migration that I talked about that can lower the cost to develop, deploy, and operate. We're seeing companies talk about being able to develop and deploy in about 1/4 the time versus some traditional .NET development environments. So there are some cost savings that can accrue there. Reducing operational complexity by simplifying the SLAs and offloading some capabilities, leveraging the provider innovation and the way that they're building services, and finally, building those new business solutions that I talked about. Think about these advantages and start looking at how these advantages map to the business requirements of your environment. Where do the existing business requirements or pain points, where can they be addressed by these advantages? But recognize that tough problems remain. Security and compliance is one. Now, when you're dealing with a shared service environment, as I talked about earlier, there's potential security challenges. How can I mitigate those challenges? Are there types of data that I just don't want to move outside to any sort of outsourcer, much less to the cloud? If I'm willing to move the data to an outsourcer, can I also move it to the shared service environment? So categorize your data, look at the data location and isolation issues, and the level of control that you can have. I will not make a blanket statement that security means that you should not look at cloud, nor will I say that security can be addressed for all workloads. Security should be viewed as a challenge to be addressed and mitigated, and you should look at it based upon different workloads and data. You don't have the transparency and control. You don't always have the level of service assurance. You've got to think about integration and portability across the cloud and with your internal systems. Software licensing is an issue. If I've got a current piece of software, I may not be able to move it into the cloud for technical reasons, but licensing may mean that I will not save money on it as well. So you have to think of software licensing in certain cases. And then finally, I've already talked about how you achieve or verify lower cost of ownership. So it's really a matter of balancing these things. And what we do with clients is look at your environment, where the things are on both sides, and help you make decisions. In fact, that's what I want to talk about now, which is a model of taking what I've got in the last slide and the various attributes of cloud and now deciding what do I specifically do. We think the starting point has got to be a business impact analysis. So what are the opportunities and constraints in your environment? So pain points in current IT infrastructure and applications, pain points in your business operations, things that the business wants. You know, so you know, are they? Is your academic group looking for certain capabilities? Is the administration group looking for more rapid, you know, analytics and business intelligence capabilities? What are the opportunities and what are the constraints around some of those challenges? Start mapping them back into that previous slide and evaluate the impact. Not simply generally for something like infrastructure as a service, but think of the use cases and workloads to decide where it makes sense to look at cloud computing and look at how you mitigate risk, et cetera. But then the key is look at these models on the right. These are really interesting models because they let you start communicating more strategically with people outside of the technology group. You can look at the challenges versus the benefits. Where the benefits are high from what you've identified and the challenges are low and manageable, that's where you embrace public cloud around things like, you know, email for students, which is one that many of you are already doing today. But some of you have decided that the benefits can be somewhat high, but the challenges are a little more high or unmanageable based upon what you feel you need to do with email. In that case, you may not embrace public cloud, but you might consider private cloud. Is there a private cloud model that makes sense? Or are there some ways we can mitigate those risks and move it over to the right? So looking at that gives you a way of really starting to think about some of the private and public workloads, and then obviously you avoid or can experiment in some of the other areas. As you're looking at this, you should also be thinking about timing and scope. When is value going to be delivered, and is it going to be indirect benefit? So we kind of think this is going to have benefit, and we buy into it, but I don't have direct line of sight between putting out this cloud service and specific reduction in costs or specific increase in some other business metric. And then direct IT means I can save IT costs in a fairly measurable and direct fashion. Direct business says here's the impact on some critical business metric. So how is it going to impact and when? Obviously, the more indirect and longer term, the more you want to avoid those, the more near-term and direct to the business you see impact, those are the projects to start first. So using these two charts, the benefits that I talked about earlier and the attributes, you can start framing a way of approaching cloud computing across those three different paths that I gave you and beginning to communicate this to the business as well. And that communication is important in this heavily hyped world. So let's get a little more detail for what you need to be thinking about. So you've got all that in place. There's lots of best practices behind the scenes. I want to center on three things that you've got to do first. Number one, establish a governance framework. Make IT the primary cloud service broker. So you want to be the broker to internal services, traditional infrastructure and applications, and also external services to your various user constituencies. That's important for the overall governance, mechanism. But when you do that, you can't do it with a giant stick. You know, how many people think you can go out to the academic groups and just say, oh, we have to control data and we have all of these policies in place, so you have to go through us. You can't go out onto the web and get any sort of a cloud service because we said so. Think that's going to work? Me either. So there is a model to put in place for saying how you can add value to various groups that are going to use the governance mechanisms, you know, to get access to external or internal services. You can essentially provide value to them to do it in a safer fashion, but not just simply being the department of no with policies. And a key part of this is bringing in the president and others in the university to help, you know, encourage or drive use of these governance mechanisms as well. So governance is important. There's technology pieces, but there's a lot of non-technology pieces that have to be put in place. Develop contingency plans up front. So what's your exit strategy for this service? How would you move that somewhere else if you need to? How are you going to extend it? What are you going to do with migration, integration, et cetera? So you need to think of contingency plans when you select a service, not later. And then finally, look at building on your existing service procurement and vendor management models for cloud computing. If you've been looking at outsourcing, you're 80% of the way there with thinking about cloud computing. This is another form of external outsourcing, but it's done in a particular way with those attributes to deliver these things as a service. So the shared service environment and other things add new elements to it, that last 20% that I have to be concerned about, but build on your current procurement models and look at how those need to be modified. And we've got lots of research that look at the particulars on how you can evolve that. But if you start with these three things, you'll be moving in the right direction. So what are the mainstream enterprise use cases? Well, there's some base use cases and other considerations. I've talked about many of these before. I've got this here so you can see it in the notes later as well. But the unpredictable workloads, project-based activities, places where you can leverage cloud scale, that's going to drive you to really considering cloud computing. And then there's other considerations that we've talked about as well. When you bring that together, we're seeing a lot of activity around development and test projects. So using the cloud, the external cloud, as a variable operational model for development and test. Oftentimes, you know, we'll have test data, so I don't have core corporate data that I'm using with that. And that's a natural environment that has volatile types of workloads. Another one is prototyping and proof of concept. Doing a lot of web application serving. So if you've got web-centric workloads, those are moving quite a bit towards exploiting cloud computing. We've got lots of examples in the commercial, educational, and government sector where there's value that's been derived with a number of those workloads. And then there's certain targeted areas of SaaS. I mentioned email before. There's a lot that's mature and happening around HR support, around some financial support applications and business services, collaboration as well. So look at pockets around software as a service. And then select custom applications. Because of the rapid application development, you can use the cloud for some more departmental or non-core applications. We're seeing a little bit less of core applications that you're building from scratch moving out on the cloud infrastructure and platform as a service today, because that's where there's a little bit of concern over the security. Where you have some more core applications that are delivered to you as software as a service, you want to simply evaluate the security models and other things of those vendors, but that's where you're going to get to some packaged applications a little bit earlier around a SaaS model. And then finally, select parallelized workloads. Well, so if you've got certain things that can make great use of the massively and rapidly scalable cloud model for applications where you couldn't really do that in a traditional model, we're seeing value for external cloud services there. Okay. I have an example here. I'm not going to spend a long time on it. I've mentioned a couple of educational examples before, but I wanted to mention somebody from a different industry, because even in things like private banking, here we have a retail bank that's re-architecting for private cloud computing. They wanted a top-down data center redesign to support cloud computing principles. So what they put together is what I've shown here. So it's building from scratch a highly homogeneous and architected environment to deliver stateless applications and support them with common infrastructure. So that's building this broad infrastructure as a service model, and they're looking ultimately at delivering their core banking applications on top of this private cloud model. The results are yet to be determined on full return on investment, but they can have significant provisioning reduction in time that they've already seen from 5 days to 30 minutes. And those types of differences around private cloud are pretty typical. And then lots of lessons learned. You got a lot of integration and tools from different suppliers and new development and architectures. I think some of this, building on things like the virtual computer lab that North Carolina State has done, and many things that a lot of your other institutions that have been looking at building some lab type of infrastructure, actually provide some interesting examples that are on the way, at least, to this idea of private cloud infrastructure. And I would encourage you to look at what's being done in some of your institutions to say, are there some things that we can build on there that might become the foundation for a private cloud infrastructure model that we use for some of our own internal applications, you know, in the future as well. So I think educational market is in kind of a unique situation there. I wanted to put this in so I can at least shift and talk about how this is being adopted. So SaaS is established as mainstream option in a lot of areas. We're starting to see multi-thousand seat deals that are out there in lots of different areas, and software as a service vendors extending into the platform side. The fastest growing area is on the far right with infrastructure as a service. We are going to see a lot of that happening, but it's going to move to more commoditization over time. And the middle side with platform as a service is high profile, and it's getting more credibility as people like Microsoft get into that. But it's probably the least mature area right now. So I think it's going to take the next 2 or 3 years for the platform as a service in a full development environment to really emerge, be integrated, and be ready for prime time for all of your mainstream applications. That's not to say you can't get value out of it today, but look at SaaS as most mature, infrastructure coming up, and then PaaS being a little bit longer term in terms of its maturity. This world of cloud computing is a, you know, 5 to 10 plus year phenomena, not a 5 week phenomena. So, new cloud brokers and ecosystems. This talks about where we see this evolving in the future. So think not only about the individual services, but what are the ecosystems? What are the marketplaces on the left? Salesforce.com has their AppExchange marketplace. Microsoft will be delivering their own marketplace. They've talked a little bit about it now. Watch that space. I expect to see more things coming up at their professional developer conference around the ecosystem in the future. These ecosystems provide foundation services for ISVs and others to build on top of that to deliver services to you, but they also provide you with some brokerage types of services that can help on consuming cloud services as well. So I would expect IBM, HP, Microsoft, Amazon more in the future beyond their current ecosystem, Salesforce.com, all of those leading vendors will be battling for ecosystems. I've already talked about the brokerage idea on the right. This simply shows that there's lots of third-party intermediary services that could arise around enhancing or insuring or provisioning or aggregating services. So look at that as being a highly volatile area that's driven by what you need to do in bringing multiple cloud services together. So the final piece that I'll hit here briefly, and then we'll have time for a few questions, is looking at the new vendor reality and what's happening on the marketplace. Vendors have to manage the shift from being a product provider to a service provider, so from software to a service. This is a risky proposition. You know, they're changing their model. Wall Street doesn't always like it. They've got to do more investment in the back end. And so that's why you're seeing it being a very difficult transition. There's new pricing models. And I think what we see today are a lot of experimental pricing models that will settle down over time. There's concerns with cannibalizing on-premise products, or cannibalization between the free version and the paid version. How many people are using live.edu from Microsoft for some of your student email and other things? A number of you out there, okay? So they've got, that's the free service. Then they have this thing called BPOS, which is what you pay for, right? And so there's some similarities, but one of the challenges Microsoft has is, how do I not make it too permeable so everybody abandons this paid stuff and goes to just the free stuff over here? You know, and so how they manage that is a key business model that somebody like Microsoft has to look at. So look at how those things influence the way that they move to this. There's new vendors and new business models. So look for the next few years as being a highly volatile market with new entrants that don't have these old pricing models or business models to deal with, challenging the existing players like Microsoft and others. And I think we're going to see, you know, some of them win and some of them lose. I actually like the direction that Microsoft is going, although I think their big challenge is going to be around some pricing models. You really want to select vendors that demonstrate a grasp of the reality and a willingness to embrace it. You know, so a year ago I would have said, that means watch out for Oracle. They've got religion at the beginning of the year, and of course now we'll tell you we've been doing cloud all along. So that actually makes Oracle better, but we've got to be careful because now we get the marketing machine from Oracle that says everything has been cloud. So good news and bad news a bit around Oracle. So I'm going to finish up then with just a little bit of a high-level view of the vendors and where their emphasis lies. And the first thing to look at on all these folks is, do they want to be a provider or enabler? Amazon and Salesforce and Google are all about being a provider. They're not going to deliver enabling technologies, at least as their current plan is today. Microsoft is hitting both of those very hard and looking at cloud being something they buy into heavily in the future. That's 70% vision today. and 30% reality, but it is shaping their products over time. So look for increasingly the cloud-based models coming out on the operating system and apps area being the anchor point, and then the on-premise software models being sort of a specialized implementation. They're on the way to delivering that, but we've still got a few years. People like VMware are really about enabling, even though they have some services they'll provide, they mainly want to enable others to deliver services. Anything that's a VMware cloud service is there to really try and seed the market more than anything else, or be a set of services that they'd like to provide through their third-party cloud providers like telecom companies or integrators or others. I've talked about Oracle, and then you've got SAP and Cisco and others. So you want to think about what is it they're trying to do, and that'll influence the way that you evaluate some of those products. Then look at, you know, are they doing infrastructure, platform, or software as a service? I won't go through all of the individual vendors, but you'll see how they come down. Amazon is really on the infrastructure side. Salesforce is on a targeted area of SaaS and some platform. Microsoft trying to do a lot of things across the board. IBM, a little bit on the SaaS and PaaS, big area focused on infrastructure as a service, more coming in the future. So this is the relative importance and view that these vendors place. This is not talking about the quality of their offerings or the actual number of existing offerings in the market. This is sort of a statement of where we see them putting the emphasis going forward, what you're likely to see from them. And so the final piece here is looking at public services or those types of community and exclusive services. Many of the vendors are really focusing on public. I think you're going to see IBM and some of these others coming from the enterprise play, looking at these nuances around community and exclusive to providing mechanism to be more enterprise ready and to differentiate what they've got. I think this is some of what's behind the rhetoric that Oracle has about this whole world of multi-tenancy as an example. So I've raised probably a lot of questions in your mind here. Just take this as a way of starting to think about where the vendors are going, and we can talk with you in more detail about the individual offerings from each of them. So I'm going to give you the bottom line, what you've got to do. What does an enterprise need to do? Number one, strategy. The only bad cloud strategy is no cloud strategy. Well, that's not entirely true. You can have a strategy that's not really great. So let me just say the worst cloud strategy is no cloud strategy. To simply ignore it is not an option because things will happen around you. So being proactive, looking at those three work streams that I talked about, deciding when, where, how, and why you're going to implement various things across different parts of the organization and being able to communicate that effectively to others in the organization is vital for information technology groups. And the project teams, by the way, need to bring together people from across the organization. If you're not working with people from legal, in finance, accounting, and some of your major user constituencies to review some of these things, you may get it right, but they may disagree. So bring them into the evaluation and discussion process earlier on. Governance, I've gone into this on when, where, why, and how. Not everything is going to move to external services, and you want to position IT as a cloud service broker. So you've got to focus on governance. From the security and compliance area, you ask what can be done to realistically assess risk and mitigate the security and compliance challenges. So look at this realistically. You know, not saying we need 99.9 absolute security for everything, therefore nothing can go in the cloud. It's not true. You're going to find certain workloads, certain types of data, where the level of availability and the level of security is going to be more manageable in the cloud. You're going to find others where it absolutely is not today. So go through a careful assessment of that and stratify the risk. Look at how you're going to build a cloud application strategy. And then in infrastructure operations, look at where you build private cloud beyond virtual servers and the extent to which you're going to build internal systems. So that's going to get you on the right path. With that, I'm right at 20 after here, but I've got, or actually a little bit lighter than that, I apologize. Thank you for keeping here for a few minutes. We don't have anything right after this, so if you need to leave, I understand, but I do want to provide the opportunity for one or two questions as well. So thanks for listening. I'll read this question and do it. If somebody else has a question, you can go to the microphone. And again, thanks for letting me extend the time. Can you please announce if you if you want copies of the presentation, you can go up to the website or send something to david.curley@gartner.com, and we can get you a copy of that. So copies of the presentation will be uploaded onto the EDUCAUSE site, and you'll be able to download those. It'll be a PDF version only, just so you know, as well. With that, any other questions? Okay, I know we're a bit late, so I'll just be up here for one-on-one questions if anybody has anything. Again, thank you very much for attending today.